In this session, we're going to talk about love and discipline. And I want to tie those together because I think they really do go hand in hand. And one thing that we need to understand is that it's not just about discipline. Sometimes people get excited about discipline because they think, oh yeah, I want to go to this parenting conference because my kids are driving me crazy. And if I could just get my kids to obey, then everything would be better. And so you've been waiting for this session. And I can appreciate that. And that's part of why we've talked about, hey, it's not just about getting the kids to obey. It's about us as parents. It's all about the parent, not about the kids. And so we want to do a good job with our kids we do want to discipline them, but it really starts with us. And it's not just the discipline, but it starts with love. Love is the key. It's not discipline. If you were to come and visit our home and stay with us for a week or a month or whatever, I don't think you would, I know that you wouldn't walk away with the feeling of, oh, wow, they discipline a lot. And that's a lot of structure. That would not be the mark of our home. The mark of our home would be one of love. I think you would come and be like, wow, they really love their kids. Now, when our kids were a little younger and there was a lot more discipline going on, you would walk away saying, they really do discipline a lot, but man, they love their kids. I think it would be the love that would still be the lasting impression. And it's really important that our homes have that flavor. Sometimes I say that our home is like the book Little Women. It's like that, but like without all the hormones. It's just kind of where you want to be. You know, it's like, what a great childhood. You know, and that's what we want to be giving our kids. And so the love really shines through more than the discipline. So we need to communicate belonging, love, and pride in our children. Matthew 3:17, a voice from heaven said, this is my son whom I love, with him I'm well pleased. And in that verse, we see three different things going on. We see that God the Father is communicating love about Jesus, but he's also communicating belonging. This is my son. This is my son whom I love. With him I'm well pleased. And there's this aspect of our kids' understanding of our acceptance that includes all three of those. They need to know that they belong, that we love them, and kind of that we like them, that we're pleased with them. We actually enjoy our kids. I remember a kid I met with one time. He'd gotten into trouble with his parents and he was basically just throwing a teenage tantrum. And I think he had tipped over a bookshelf or a china cabinet or something along those lines. And so we were talking, and I'm like, hey, do you know that your dad loves you? And he's like, yeah, I know that. I'm like, really? Okay. That kind of surprised me. I'm like, do you know that your dad likes you? No. You don't think he likes you? No. Why not? Well, I think he's disappointed in me. And there was something apart from, well, you know, my dad loves me because that's what he's supposed to do. He's a Christian and you're supposed to love your kids. But does he really like me? Now, you know, we need to understand from the dad's point of view, it's a little hard to like your kid when he's tipping over the china cabinet or something. You know, it's a little harder to be proud of him at that point. But still, I think just generally in our homes, our kids need to understand, I love you and I enjoy you. I like you. I'm proud of you. I'm glad that you're mine, that you're my kid. And I guess we'll show that. Just a quick video about this dad that takes care of his handicapped child and runs races with him. Sorry about the tears. I love that picture of just a belonging. It's like, well, why does that dad love his kid? It's because, well, he's growing up and he's turning into such a fine young man. It's because he's winning awards at school. That's my boy. I love him just because he's mine. And we need to make sure our kids feel that when they're doing great and when they're doing terrible. You know, they need to understand, I love you, you're mine. And that is going to help a lot with our kids. We need to communicate love to our kids and just everything. We just walk through the room, we hug them, we tickle them, we say I love you all the time with our kids. We tease them, we ruffle up their hair, we touch them. The teenagers, you can just punch them in the shoulder. You know, just anything you can do to communicate love. And even when they're like, don't touch, why are you touching me all the time? It's like, because you need it. I don't want to be touched. no, you need it. I'm going to touch you. I don't care what you say, you know, because you have to be doing everything you can to be communicating love to your kids. Loving parents discipline their kids because it helps the kids. That's what's good for them. Proverbs 13:24 says, if you refuse to discipline your children, it proves you don't love them. If you love your children, you'll be prompt to discipline them. And if you could think of just a fork in the road, discipline is this. There are two paths that kids can go down in life. They can go down a good path or a bad path. And what we're trying to do is make the bad path as miserable as possible and make the good path as pleasant as possible because we want them to choose the good path. Remember when Jesus said that he doesn't want any of these little children to be lost? He's saying, I don't want any of them to go down the wrong path. I think that's why God paints this picture for us of heaven and hell. He's like, okay, well, this one's as miserable as possible. This one's as awesome as possible, and I want you to choose. We can't make our kids obey, but we can control those paths. We can warn them about each path. We can tell about what each path's going to be like. We can tell them about our experiences on the path. We can discipline them when they start going down the wrong path, and I want to make the bad path as miserable as possible. Why? To be mean? Because I'm strict? No, it's because I love my kids so much. I want them to go down the right path. So my job is going to be make the wrong path miserable. And so that's the basis of discipline is that it helps the kids. It's what's good for them. Loving parents discipline their kids because it brings order, hope, and peace to the home. Proverbs 19:18 says, correct your children where there's still hope. The correction brings hope. Proverbs 29:17 says, discipline your son and he will give you peace. He'll bring delight to your soul. Is your home a home of peace? Do your kids drive you crazy? Are you at your wits' ends because of their behavior? Well, if you are, then discipline can fix that. Discipline actually will bring peace. Hebrews 12:11 says, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace. Discipline brings a harvest of righteousness and peace. That should be the flavor of our homes. Our homes should be like Little Women. It should be this harvest of, man, this is awesome. What a great childhood I'm having. Discipline truly changes lives. It's amazing the difference between homes where children are disciplined correctly and lovingly and where they're not. Our Heavenly Father models loving discipline. I'm going to skip this verse because it's quoted in the next one. In Hebrews 12:5, it says, and have you forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons? My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart when he rebukes you because the Lord disciplines those he loves and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons, for what son is not disciplined by his father? If you're not disciplined and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us and we respected them for it. How much more then should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good that we may share in his holiness. So we see that discipline is a part of God's relationship with us. Who is it that God disciplines? It's the son he loves. It's the son he's delighted in, not the one he's sick of and can't stand. And, I need to teach him a lesson. Disciplines a son he loves that he's delighted in. Revelation 3:19 says, those whom I love, I rebuke and discipline, so be earnest and rebuke. Who does he discipline? Those whom he loves. Love paves the way for the acceptance of discipline. We all have a hard time being corrected. If someone says to you, hey, I notice you're driving too slow, or I don't like the way you taught Sunday school this week, or I don't think that shirt you're wearing is appropriate, or you know, that's never easy to take, right? It's always offensive to be corrected. But if someone loves you and you know that they're truly doing it for your best interests, that sure helps a lot. You know, a coach can be really strong with his team. He can make them do really hard things if they know that it's because he's trying to help them, because he loves them. And in that verse we just looked at, it says God disciplines us for our good. He has our interests in mind. We need to have our kids' interests in mind as we discipline them. Loving discipline exchanges a controlled amount of pain now for an unknown amount of pain later. Proverbs 15:10 says, stern discipline awaits him who leaves the path. He who hates correction will die. And it's saying It's these two paths, right? It's saying, man, if you go down this wrong path, God's going to be trying to correct you and stern discipline awaits you. So it's not like you can avoid discipline at all. But what you can do is you can try to implement that discipline earlier on the path. Try to correct them before they go down really far. And then who knows what lengths God will go to try to bring them back. I want to be faithful when they're little, when they're young, when they're moldable. I want to discipline them now to save them from other discipline later on in life. We need to encourage and reward good behavior, discourage and correct bad behavior. That's just really basic. It makes sense, but it's not always easy to do. Sometimes the opposite is easy. Sometimes we reward our kids. You know, our kids fuss and whine, and they come, kind of pick me up. Like, oh, okay, honey, and we pick them up. Well, what did we do? We just rewarded them for bad behavior. Instead of correcting them, saying, hey, no fuss. You know, come back in 30 seconds and ask politely, or you know, you say it nice, or whatever. Instead of training them, sometimes we reward them. The toy store. You're walking through the store, and they're like, I want that toy, I want that toy, I want that toy. Like, no, you can't have the toy. I want the toy, I want the toy. Okay, well, you can have the toy. I'll buy it for you. Or in a similar way, we say, okay, well, you can hold on to the toy while we go through the store, and then we're going to put it back. Same thing, right? You're rewarding them for fussing. And that's so easy to do. And we need to understand that what we need to do is we need to correct and train and discipline and say, no, you can't fuss. You need to be content. I'm not going to let you manipulate me that way. There are three keys to successful discipline. Needs to be consistent. It needs to be immediate. And it needs to be memorable. Okay? Consistent, immediate, and memorable. So consistently, I mean, just every time, if every time we do something wrong, we get in trouble for it, that helps us obey, right? If you had some little computer chip in your car that every time you sped, you got a ticket, it would change your driving behavior, right? You know, even if you're not some crazy driver speeding all the time, it would matter. If every time they were consistent and gave you a ticket, that would change your behavior. Immediate is really important. We are just, long-term consequences just don't mean very much to us. You know, if you get in trouble for something and you get caught right away, there's something about that that's more meaningful than if it comes up 6 months later. Let me give you a couple examples. So there was a guy in our church that was using dessert as a form of discipline, saying, oh, well, because of the way you behave today, you can't have dessert today. Okay, not necessarily what I would do, but generally works, okay? Well, then his kid did something else. Okay, well, you can't have dessert tomorrow either. Okay, maybe that still works, but it was like, okay, now you can't have dessert 3 Tuesdays from now, you know? You can't have it for the next 23 days or whatever. And then it's like, okay, at that point, that's just not helpful because to a kid, that's like, it might as well be an eternity away. It's just, that doesn't mean anything to them. What means something to us is what's immediate. So you can think of like little kids, you're trying to train them from being in the crib to a toddler bed. And they're in the toddler bed and you are downstairs doing stuff, and you come up and you check on them, and oh, they're out of bed, and they're sitting there, and they're playing with toys. Well, what's helpful is to catch them immediately, because you say, hey, get back in the bed. It, depending on their vocabulary skills, that may not even mean much to them, because what did I do wrong? I've been out of bed for 30 minutes, you know? But what you do is you sit outside the room while you're training them in this, and you hear the bed creak, and you look in, and as soon as their foot touches the ground, say, get back in bed. And then they get bed, and they understand, okay, I can't even get a little bit out of bed, and mom or dad is all over this. And so being caught immediately means way more than if you catch them 30 minutes later. And so that's important. It's especially important with young kids who are still developing some of the communication skills and stuff. It needs to be memorable. Memorable is another word for painful, but painful conjures up images of of physical discipline, which I'm not talking about yet. I'm going to get to that in a second. But all discipline is memorable. When you reprove someone, that's memorable. You know, when you get a speeding ticket, there's no physical punishment. It's not physically painful, but it's still painful, right? It's always like three times more expensive than you think it should be. And so I just look at those three things. It's like if your kid's misbehaving in something, like your kid's the nursery biter, you know, I just think you can stop that. You can stop that from happening. I have not heard any stories. I'm not trying to point anybody out. You might have the kid with the biter. I'm just saying my church has always had a biter kid. But to me, it's like, okay, well, I just need to be consistent. Every time they bite, I need to catch them, which is easy because it leaves bite marks, and you can be pretty sure. It's like, okay, I can tell you a bit. Needs to be immediate. Sit outside the nursery. Don't go into church. Have your quiet time out there. Let them come get you or work in the nursery or something. Catch them right after they did it. And then it needs to be memorable. You have to discipline in a way that communicates to the child, do not ever do this again. Communicate, that's it. And we've had kids bite. All our kids have probably bit once or twice. And that's it. There's no reason, because we will not do things that consistently, immediately cause us pain. We just won't. That's why we don't touch the stove, because it always causes pain immediately. And so discipline that uses those three principles always work. Kids always bump up against the boundaries. If you discipline effectively, their behaviors will correspond closely to the boundaries you've set. So you might as well set high boundaries. Have high standards, and your kids will, their behavior will align to those standards. We use the following standards with obedience. They need to obey quickly. They need to obey completely. They need to obey cheerfully. Quickly means they need to do it right when we ask them to do it. Completely means they need to do exactly what we ask them to do. If I say, "Say yes, Dad," and they say, "Okay, Dad," that's not completely. If I say, "Say yes, Dad," and they say, "Yes, Daddy," that's not completely. I know it sounds mean, but you can just tell. They'll say anything except exactly what I told them to do. And so it needs to be completely, it needs to be cheerfully with a good heart. Not that they're always, "Okay, Daddy, I'll do whatever you want." It's like, okay, let's be somewhat realistic here. But they shouldn't be rolling their eyes and fussing and making a big deal out of it. So everything I've talked about so far is related to just generic discipline. This works in all forms of discipline. But I want to talk about spanking. And I know that that's a challenging topic, and it's something that is hard to do in 0 minutes. So let's just make it a cliffhanger. Let's stop right there. And we'll talk about that after lunch. Let's do that. We can cover that pretty quickly. Let me just intro it a little bit. For some people, I think it's a very offensive topic, in that I would even propose that spanking could possibly be something that would be a good idea, or that would be a Christian thing to do, is super offensive, and you're like, "Oh, I can't believe you brought that up. I'm not coming back here for lunch." And I'm just going to ask you, just hear me out. Let's just see what God says on this topic. I think as we go through it, it'll actually maybe start to make sense. And you still may not agree with it, and that's fine, because you don't have to do everything I do. You don't have to believe everything that I believe. But let's at least look and see what God has to say on this. And I think as we look at it, it'll make some sense, and it'll at least help you understand other people's position, even if you don't hold the same position. So let's go ahead and break there. "Folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him." 23:13-14 says, "Do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death." And then Proverbs, I seem to have lost clicker. There it goes. All right, and then Proverbs 29:15 says, "The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother." And so in those verses, we can see, obviously, it's talking about physical discipline. It's talking about some kind of physical punishment. And my book, the Premeditated Parenting Book, goes into that pretty in depth, and If you don't believe that that's what those verses are talking about, it talks about some of the different arguments that people have related to that. But let me just define what I mean by spanking. I use the word spanking rather than the rod, or some people use chastisement or different words like that. And I just feel like the word spanking is the one that most closely captures what the Bible talks about. We don't use the word chastisement in the English language. It's just not a commonly used word. The idea of the rod, that doesn't conjure up good images in our society. And so spanking, I think, is most closely representing what the Bible talks about. And so I'm going to use that word. What I mean by that is I mean something that's controlled, that it's not something we do in a fit of anger with our kids. We don't do it when we're pushed to the limit or something. But it's just something that's very controlled. It's done on the bum-bum. It's done in private. And it's painful and it's not damaging. So that's what I mean when I use the word spanking. So the question we all have, of course, is that abuse? Is spanking abuse? And I heard a sermon on that one time, and my pastor, John Meyer, who's the regional director of our region, and it's the same region as here, and he was talking on this topic, and he just gave a great message. And he was talking along, and he said, every night I take my child into his bedroom, and I pull down his pants, and I hurt him on the bottom. And I'm sitting in the audience like, what are you talking about? What do you mean every night? Like whether he needs it or not? Why do you pull down his pants? That's kind of weird. Why do you use the word hurt him on the bottom? And all these red flags were going up. And there's this pregnant pause. And he waited. My son is a diabetic. And I'm giving him a shot of insulin. You know, the wheels are turning in my head. It's like, oh, I get it. So you're not actually hurting him like to be mean or to be weird or creepy. You're trying to help your son. You're not trying to do anything strange. You're trying to save his life by giving him a shot of insulin. And that's actually a really good thing. It sounded like kind of a weird thing when you said it, but it's actually a good thing. And oh. And that's what you're saying spanking is, too. That's the connection you're trying to get me to make here, is it's not just, oh, I'm trying to do this to my child. I'm doing this for my child. I'm not trying to hurt my child. I'm doing it for his benefit. And that little illustration was so helpful for me. And then he talked about how just, you know, how if you take a knife and you cut somebody open, what a, you know, horrible thing that is. Unless it's a surgeon. So the motivation behind the pain really helps us understand whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing. We have to understand the motivation, and so we know that when a surgeon cuts someone open, it's a good thing. If a purse snatcher cuts someone open, it's a bad thing. When a dentist drills on your tooth, is he being cruel? Of course. No. He's trying to help you, even though it just does not seem that way at the time. When a coach yells at the team or makes them do extra laps or whatever, is he being mean? No, he's trying to help. He's trying to make a difference. When someone shocks someone else, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Well, it depends. Are they just, you know, rubbing their feet across the carpet and touching them and shocking them? Or are they taking an electrical cord and shocking them? Or is it a paramedic using defibrillator paddles, shock paddles? Well, those are all very different things. The motivation actually matters. So is it abuse? No, absolutely not. When it's being done for the good of the child, then it's a good thing. It's a helpful thing. So we need to be careful of not lumping all forms of physical pain together and saying all forms of physical pain are bad. No, sometimes physical pain can be a good thing. So spanking works because that's the way we're made. Spanking works because pain tells us to stop. I hate abuse. I think it's a terrible thing. But I think spankings are a really good thing. And I think they work really well because we're made such that pain tells us to stop. Why is pain a good thing when you touch something hot on the stove? Because it tells you, don't do that again. Don't touch that. You're going to damage the skin. And the pain says, stop. What's the purpose of pain when you're eating and all of a sudden you bite your cheek? Your body's saying, hey, stop, don't do that again, be careful. That's not a good thing. Pain tells you to be careful. Pain tells you to stop. What's the purpose of pain when you try to catch a porcupine? It's teaching you no touchy. You know, do not touch this animal. And you get a porcupine quill and you'd be like, okay, I'm done. I'm not going to do that again. Pain works with our body. The purpose of pain is to tell us to stop doing something. You twist your ankle, you step on it. Oh, that hurts. Your body's telling you, don't do it again. And so that's part of why spanking works so well. There are benefits with spanking. It's loving. Proverbs 13:24. He who spares the rod hates his son. He who loves him is careful to discipline him. It's safe. Proverbs 23:13-14 says, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. Punish him with a rod and save his soul from death. I think if you keep within the boundaries that I said, you keep it controlled. It's not done in anger. It's done on the bottom. It's causing pain but not damage. Then that's safe. You keep it in those boundaries. We were at a conference, and our son Zebby, who was six at the time, I believe, he got into trouble, and one of the other kids needed to discipline him, and they actually, we'd given him authority to spank if they needed to, and they didn't want to do that, so they were going to have him write out some verses. And I think he was supposed to write out like three verses on obeying or something like that, or being kind to others. And he's six, so writing out three verses is kind of a big deal. And he's writing them out, and he's crying, and he's crushed. Oh, this is so hard. Why do I have to do this? This is terrible. I'd rather have a spanking. And so, you know, we can see a spanking as, well, that's kind of abusive. And in his mind, it's like, no, let's just get a spanking and get this over with. It's not this terrible, horrible thing. No kid would choose a beating. No kid would choose abuse. But he chose that. He still had to write out the verse, but that's what he wanted to choose. So it's safe. If you keep it in the bottom, you keep it within those boundaries. It's effective. It does some amazing things. Check out some of these verses. It drives out folly. Proverbs 22:15 says, folly is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. It saves their soul from death. Proverbs 23:13-14, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with the rod, he will not die. Punish him with the rod and save his soul from death. I have no idea what that means. I mean, that's like, wow, save his soul from death. I mean, whatever that is, that sounds like a pretty good thing. And I think what it is, it's that path thing, the fork in the road. You get them to go down the right path, you're saving their soul from death. But whatever that is, wow, that's amazing. It imparts wisdom. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, so it drives out folly and it imparts wisdom. If you've ever read through Proverbs and its emphasis on wisdom and how harshly it speaks against foolishness, it's like, well, that's incredible that the spanking does those two things, drives out folly and imparts wisdom. It keeps you from being disgraced by the behavior of your children. The rod of correction imparts wisdom, but a child left to himself disgraces his mother. It's not that that's the end of the world if you're disgraced by your children, if you're embarrassed at church or in a restaurant or something because of the way your kids act. But if that's happening all the time, hey, it's a real benefit to realize, hey, spanking can fix that. My kids don't have to act this way. I can help out my kids. I can change their behavior. I can save myself some embarrassment by training them in that way. It changes the heart. Proverbs 20:30 says, physical punishment cleanses away evil. Such discipline purifies the heart. And so we need to understand that it's not just changing outward behavior. It doesn't just fix problems like, okay, I spanked my kid and now they quit torturing animals. They quit drawing on the dog and things like that. No, I spanked my kid and it actually changed them. It changed their hearts. That's what that verse is saying. Wow. That's amazing. So I look at those benefits, and I just think, what a great, amazing, effective tool God has given us. I was listening to the Christian radio station again, the same one as before, and they came on, and they were talking about alternative forms of discipline, and callers were calling in and giving ideas on alternative forms of discipline. At first, I was kind of good-hearted about it, and like, oh, that's kind of interesting. This should be fun to hear what people say. And they go on and on, and then as I was thinking about it, it started to eat at me a little bit. Like, alternative forms to what? Isn't that interesting to think about? Alternative forms to what the Bible talks about, right? I mean, alternative forms to spanking? There are only maybe a dozen to 14 to 15 verses in the Bible that are specifically written to parents on parenting. Just a handful. Most of those, the majority of those, deal with spanking, deal with discipline. Wow. And yet, and I can understand why they didn't want to talk about that on the radio, but I think we can just have this mindset of, like, oh, we don't really want to do that. But to me, it's like, this works so well. Why are we looking for alternative forms when it does all these things and it imparts wisdom and drives out folly and saves their soul from death? Why would I look for something else? To me, it's like, this seems like a great tool. And sometimes it just seems like it's like pushing the reset button with the kids. Like, they're just having a hard time and they're struggling, they're making all these bad choices, and you give them a spanking and it's like, all right, reset. And it's like, wow, that is amazing, amazing. And so in light of that, I would encourage you, do not withhold spankings or use them as a last resort. Proverbs 23, 13 and 14 says, I lost my place on my paper. Oh, okay. Proverbs 23, 13 and 14 says, do not withhold discipline from a child. If you punish him with a rod, he will not die. We've seen this verse. But just look at those first words, do not withhold discipline. What's that saying? Well, don't withhold discipline. Yeah, it's a proverb, it's a principle, but what's the principle there? Don't withhold discipline. When your child needs discipline, give it to him. And you look at the context of the verse and what it says in the second part there in verse 14, what type of discipline is it talking about? The spanking. Don't withhold a spanking. When your kid needs a spanking, give him a spanking. Proverbs 13:24, He who spares the rod hates his son, but he who loves him is careful. Or the NAS says diligent. The New King James says prompt to discipline him. Careful, diligent, or prompt to discipline him. The Amplified Bible says, he who spares the rod of discipline hates his son, but he who loves him disciplines diligently and punishes him early. So I gave a sermon similar to this one time, and a young mom came up to me afterwards and said, my mom believed in discipline. I'm like, all right. Sounds like there's a story coming. Do you want to know when my brothers got their first spanking? I'm like, yeah. He says, well, it was when they robbed a gun store. I'm like, wow, that's fascinating. And it's kind of a funny story because you know what type of people own gun stores? I don't want to be stereotyping people and being judgmental, but generally, people that own gun stores are gun owners. I'm pretty sure I haven't seen a study on it or anything, but like, why don't you rob a candy store? Or, you know, it's like, that's just not smart at all. And so her mom spanked these boys, and that was good. It was good to spank them for that. But I think there's a mindset there of, yeah, I believe in spanking. 90% of Americans believe in spanking. But what's their mindset there? Well, it's the mindset of that mom. It's when your kid does something really, really bad, once or twice, maybe five times in their life, I'm going to give them a spanking. And I look at those verses that we just covered. It's like, oh, what a benefit we're losing out on. There is such a benefit there of spanking. And I don't have that mindset at all. I don't see it as being, okay, a criminal offense, okay, I'm going to spank you now. It's like, you did something wrong. You did something wrong with small, I'm going to spank you. If you're a little kid, I'm going to spank you when you do something that's wrong. And it's not a big deal. It's not a last resort. It's just part of our family. And the kids see it that way as well. And so maybe just practically, some people might have the question of, okay, well, practically, what do you do? How do you spank? Again, I encourage you to read the book because it covers this more thoroughly. But just practically, some things that we do is we just take our kid into the bathroom just so that we can spank them privately or bedroom or whatever. We make sure that they know what they did wrong. So, okay, this is why I'm going to spank you. It's because you yelled at your brother or whatever. We use a wooden spoon. As we saw those verses earlier, the Bible talks about the use of a rod. In our culture, that just immediately sounds like abuse, right? So let me explain why we use a wooden spoon. Because in the Bible, I think we can have this mindset of, well, they weren't very smart back then. And we figured out some things, and we figured out that you can actually use a hand instead of a rod. And I kind of look at it, it's like, well, this was inspired by God. And it talks about a rod. And it's not like we invented hands after that. You know, it's like they could have used hands. I mean, it's just more convenient. It's just right there. I can just use it at any time. And so I just think the Bible talks about using a rod. And so I just want to do that. And I've heard other reasons, you know, oh, it's good. You want your hand to be the instrument of love and the rod's then the instrument of discipline. And that's fine. I don't even care about that. What I care about is that's what the Bible talks about. And so I just want to imitate what the Bible talks about. I think the other thing that's helpful is we're trying to cause a sting, trying to cause a little bit of pain, but not a lot of pain. We're not trying to cause harm. And so, you know, you can do this on your own if you want, but if you just slap your leg until it stings, that didn't sting. Almost. Okay, that stung. That's a lot of force. But if I had a wooden spoon, you just go, ow, man, that hurts. And so actually, we think using a rod is really mean and harmful, but actually using the hand, I think is more dangerous because it really takes a lot of force to get that sting. And so we use a rod in the form of a wooden spoon. Why do we use a wooden spoon? I don't know the physics of it, but to us, it just seems like having the head on the spoon makes it easier to aim. And it just does. And if you hit a little high or a little low, you realize, oh, that was out of balance. That really, really hurts and could cause damage. And so we use wooden spoons. I know the Bible doesn't say wooden spoons. They had wooden spoons back then, I'm sure, but they probably didn't want to break them because, you know, they were hard to make, and we can just buy a whole bunch of them. And so we use a wooden spoon. And not that we break them over our kids. Not that we never have either, though. But you know, it's just a good swat that stings, and it's really not a big deal in our home. We probably give 5 to 7 swats, and you need to use your own discretion. The Bible doesn't tell you how many swats to give, but that's what we do. And basically, you're trying to set a course of this is more unpleasant than what you were doing. It's the fork in the road. Want this experience to be unpleasant, I need to swat you enough that you think, I don't want to do that again. You give them enough swats to communicate that. And then it's just not a big deal. And then we move on. At one of our other conferences, we don't do a ton of conferences, but one of our kids got into trouble again while we were gone. They get into trouble when we're there too. But we came home and we gave our 8-year-old at the time spanking. Kathleen did, I think. And that night, she said to Kathleen, she goes, Mommy, thank you for giving me a spanking. I needed that. And so if you're not familiar with spanking and stuff, I don't want you to think, oh, this is this horrible thing, and I can't believe we're talking about this. In our home, it's just very normal and natural, and it's healthy, and the kids are used to it, and it's fine. It's a part of our life. So after the spanking, we test repentance with simple commands. We might say something like, hey, you need to go back and tell your brother sorry, and they need to do that, and they need to do it with a good heart. Otherwise, they didn't obey the instruction we just gave them, and they would get a spanking for that. With little kids, we might say, okay, I want you to look in my eyes. I'm going to give you some instructions. Look into my eyes, and don't look away until I stop talking. So I've given them a new command. They can obey, or they cannot obey. And you can tell, it's like, you're not looking in my eyes. You're looking, you know, they'll like look off to the side. They'll look at your eyebrows. They'll look at the tip of your nose, and you can tell. They think they're getting away with it. It's like, no, I'm going to spank you again because you didn't do what I just asked you to. And so you just give them simple commands and make sure they obey. And If they don't, then you discipline them again. And then once discipline's over, it's over. My leg still stings. That really hurt. Once discipline's over, it's over. 2 Corinthians 2:6 and 7 says, the punishment inflicted on the majority is sufficient for him. Now instead, you ought to forgive and comfort him so that he will not be overwhelmed by excessive sorrow. This is a guy who was committing sexual sin in the church, and he received church discipline. And then they're like, okay, at some point, though, enough is enough, and we're going to move on. We don't want him to become overcome by excessive sorrow. He was sorry, but now we're through it, and we're going to move on with life. Forgive him and comfort him and move on. So that's kind of what we do with our kids. We want him to be sorry and repentant. And then when it's over, and we can go back to life. And I think that's one of the beauties of a spanking versus like a timeout or a naughty chair or something like that. Is in those scenarios, I think they get kind of stuck in this spot of disapproval, of kind of like, okay, well, here's this period of 15 minutes or 30 minutes or an hour or whatever of being out of my favor. And I think our kids like spankings because it's just, it's dealt with and it's done. And so the relationship's restored. Everything in the home is back in its peaceful state, and we can move on in complete acceptance and love. Psalm 35 says, his anger lasts only a moment, his favor lasts a lifetime. Weeping may remain for a night, but rejoicing comes in the morning. And I like that, just that part of the verse there where it says that his favor lasts a lifetime. And we want our home to have that flavor. Not of, oh, we're structured and we're disciplined and we're, if you cross the line, we're all over you. That's not the flavor of our home. The flavor of our home is we are for you. We want our kids to be living under our favor. We love you. We're supportive. Yeah, we'll spank you if you get out of line. You need that. You need the structure. You need the discipline. You need the follow through. But you need to know that we're for you. And so after a spanking, then it's just done. We move on. The peace is restored. And you're back in complete favor, just like God treats us. So on page 26 of your handout, there's some house rules. Probably wrote this when our kids were real young. Just some different basic ideas on rules that you would have in your house. And then on page 27, let's have some basic standards that we would have with our kids. Super simple stuff. You know, don't roll your eyes. Listen patiently, knock before entering, just basic stuff. Just because sometimes it seems like if you haven't grown up in a family that had good standards, it's hard to kind of figure those out on your own. So it's not an exhaustive list, but just some stuff to chew on. So that's it for the discipline session.